With the senior population growing beyond precedent, elder abuse has been called the crime of the 21st century. It occurs when trusted people in an older adult's life intentionally act so as to cause them harm or serious risk. Researchers estimate that 1 in 10 of the country's 50 million seniors are abused each year, but such cases may be dramatically undercounted, for it's also estimated that only 1 in every 23 cases is actually reported to Adult Protective Services. This underscores the need for greater public awareness in responding to elder abuse, especially in areas with already high populations of seniors. We'll discuss elder abuse with an eye to where we live, just ahead on Media Meet. Hello and welcome to WNMU's Media Meet. I'm Bill Hart. Our guests are Upper Peninsula Commission for Area Progress Long-Term Care Programs Director Mark Bomberg, retired UPCAP Quality Assurance Specialist Kathy Clintworth, Michigan State Police Community Service Trooper Dale Hongesto, and Marquette County Prosecuting Attorney Matt Wiese. Thank you all for being here.
Thank you.
First, a bit more on the people and organizations represented. And their intersection with elder abuse. Mark, tell us a little about the Upper Peninsula Commission for Area Progress, especially since 1972 when it was named the official UP Area Agency on Aging. UPCAP is a private nonprofit corporation. What's the mission, budget, staff, and how does it work?
Well, Bill, UPCAP has been around since 1965. We were initially created by the 15 counties to serve as a central grant writer for the counties. Our mission is basically today to identify with the counties areas of need, things that aren't being addressed, with a primary focus on the senior population. Mm-hmm. We have a staff of over 100 across the Upper Peninsula. We have 6 different offices. In our long-term care division, we have a staff of 40 people. Wow. With our primary goal in terms of community-based long-term care of keeping folks who qualify for nursing home care in their homes for as long as possible.
Okay, so that's really what's covered under long-term care programs. That's the question. It's probably a lot of stuff. Right?
Okay. We have several funding sources, and as an area agency on aging, our primary focus is on providing basic home care services to individuals who may just need something as simple as a home-delivered meal. Okay. They may need some homemaking assistance, personal care assistance, and it gets more and more complicated as it goes on. As I said, our biggest division is what we call our My Choice program, which has a budget of $11 million, mm-hmm. and we're serving right now approximately 400 to 500 people who, without us, would be in an actual nursing home.
Okay. What UPCAP resources are devoted to matters related to elder abuse? Specifically?
We have a very specific grant right now from the state. It's called PREVENT, which stands for Prevent Elder and Vulnerable Adult Abuse, Exploitation, and Neglect Today.
Okay.
It's a grant for about $75,000. We have, through this grant, developed a series of public service announcements. We have 3 trained staff who go out and do community trainings. Presentations can be as short as 20 minutes to community organizations, mm-hmm. up to a 6-hour actual training for,
really?
Very comprehensive training for young social workers, for state police, for healthcare workers.
Mm-hmm.
And so the intent of the grant is to try to bring attention to what truly adult abuse, neglect, and exploitation are. We all know what the obvious signs are. This program is designed to go beyond that to show truly what abuse, neglect, and exploitation are.
Okay. Kathy, you're a registered nurse.
Yes.
And a retired UPCAP quality assurance supervisor. What does that work entail, and is elder abuse a major concern there?
Well, first of all, as quality assurance supervisor or specialist, mm-hmm. I was working with the agencies across the UP who provide these in-home services,
okay.
on making sure that they are meeting the requirements that are a part of the funding source. However, our elder abuse, neglect, and exploitation grant, the PREVENT grant, mm-hmm. I was actively involved in doing the trainings and giving technical assistance to these agencies so that I could help train staff in recognizing and know how and when and what to report.
Okay. Dale, I was unaware that the Michigan State Police had community service troopers. Probably ought not to come as a surprise. Can you describe the position and your contact with issues and circumstances related to elder abuse?
All right, thanks, Bill. Actually, the CST position, the community service trooper position, started back in 2010 with a grant through the Department of Justice. It was called a community-oriented policing grant.
Sure.
Maybe you heard of the
okay.
COPS grant. Yeah. 21 CSTs were started back then in 2010. Now it's morphed into, we have 34 of us in the state yeah. through the MSP. The CST is a MSP position. Each post in the state, there's 29 posts, have a CST, are mandated to have a CST through our department. A few of the bigger posts downstate have a couple because they have sometimes four or five counties to cover. So I'm fortunate enough to be one. Our CST down at the Gladstone Post, actually, we cover the Delta and Menominee County area. So okay. I do a lot of interaction with the seniors. Specifically, one of the things I do is our Coffee with a Cop events, I think, are very important for the seniors. The seniors love them. I have either myself or one of our post detectives or both. A lot of times we'll talk at this, you know, do a question and answer session and do a... you know, talk for 20, 30 minutes on identity theft and fraud and elder abuse
sure.
and things like that. And they're really attentive when we're talking. They want to be there and they want to learn more about it. They find out in their newsletters that what's coming and we're going to be there. We'll have four or five, six of us there and just have a great interaction. And a lot of times after we're done with that, they feel more comfortable with us and they come up and talk about maybe some of their concerns and maybe they've been victimized by a scam or identity theft
okay.
or, you know, unfortunately some
so
sort
really,
of elder abuse.
Really breaks the ice is what you're saying.
Exactly. That's exactly what it is. They just feel more comfortable instead of just, you know, going to the post and they want to, you know, I think they're a little bit nervous about doing that and they're a little
sure.
bit scared about doing that. So, that Coffee with a Cop program is a nationwide program, and it's been, as we all see what's going on in the society now, the community-oriented policing is really big.
Okay. Matt, you have 20 years prosecutorial experience. As a duly elected chief prosecuting attorney for Marquette County, you oversee thousands of misdemeanors, hundreds of felonies each year. You're known for specializing in personal violence and safety issues. What sorts of elder abuse cases cross your desk?
Well, we see, thanks, Bill, we see financial exploitation is probably the main crime that we see,
mm-hmm.
but we also have neglect cases. Not so much the assaultive where there's an act of assault, an act of aggression or violence, but more of a neglect type of a situation. Like Dale was saying, we see fraud, we see embezzlement, we see identity theft, those types of crimes.
Okay. Have there been significant changes in the law at the state level?
Yeah, there have been over the last number of years. We have vulnerable adult statutes, which cover anybody who's a vulnerable situation, not just seniors. We've increased the threshold amounts for what makes a crime a misdemeanor versus a felony,
okay.
and the greater penalties for taking advantage of a vulnerable adult. Also, last year, Michigan amended the fourth-degree vulnerable adult crime to allow for just doing an act that could cause injury or harm to a senior. And it doesn't actually even require the harm, so just leaving them in a situation where they were exposed.
Vulnerable.
Yeah.
I see.
So there's been some good changes.
The Michigan Department of Health and Human Services in 2013 estimated that up to 90,000 older adults are abused each year in Michigan. Yet, despite spending over $99 million on aging services, which may not be very much, I'm not sure, a statewide programs assessment said they're fragmented, inconsistent at the local level, talking statewide here, and lack an integrated reporting system. How does that review square with services and programs in the UP?
Well, I think that assessment is pretty much true and to the point, mm-hmm. and one of the reasons that the state established a central hotline for reporting adult abuses in a way to overcome this. Prior to the central call-in number,
mm-hmm.
The reporting had to be done at a local Department of Human Services.
Okay.
People would report cases. There became types of cases that were reported on a regular basis, same people. Part of the problem with adult abuse neglect is that the person is an adult, has the right to make decisions, and those decisions might not be what you and I think they should be making, and that results in...
Yeah.
And then the local offices are required to go and investigate the situation, and if a person says, no, I'm happy with what the way things are going, mm-hmm. nothing more is done. I mean, that's part of the problem with the law.
I see.
It doesn't... It allows a person to make decisions, whether they're the right decisions or not.
Okay.
And I think what has helped in the Upper Peninsula is when we go out and do these presentations, we encourage anyone who questions whether there is abuse, neglect, or exploitation going on to call and talk about the issue. Don't ignore it.
Okay.
Because what happens is it's very possible that it's something that should be investigated. And in the UP, our 211 call center, which has knowledgeable information specialists who can help them make a decision whether or not they should go ahead and make the call.
Okay. How did 211 get started? That's something that you, UPCAP, first established.
We got involved at UPCAP because our executive director went to a conference and saw what was happening elsewhere in the United States. Traditionally, 211 has been financed by local United Ways.
Okay.
UPCAP financed the one in the UP on its own because our local United Ways have already been tapped out.
All right.
So we used, that's part of our nonprofit status to take monies that we may have generated over the years to put it back into our mission. And our mission is to address areas that where there's lacking. And the 211 has been in place now for 5 or 6 years. And
Is it solely an emergency number?
No.
Okay.
It's a place where people can go. If they are looking to volunteer for things,
okay.
If they just need some basic information about the types of services that are available in their community. It's also driven, it's connected to a nationwide network now, so if a person has a loved one in the Upper Peninsula, they can call from anywhere in the United States just by calling their local 211, and it'll be, they will be able to get information about what's going on. In the UP, if somebody's living in Ironwood and their children are in Menominee, they can call 211 and find out what services are available in Ironwood area.
Right. Okay. Seniors are well represented in the UP. I think we all know that. People 60 and older are at least 20% of the population of every county in the UP. And Onondaga County has upwards of 40%. Most central UP counties have up to 30%. Statistics on elder abuse may be limited or confusing, but we have a lot of experienced and committed people reporting from the field. So in your estimation, how prevalent is elder abuse where we live?
You want to take it to Kathy?
I think it's very difficult because of the fact that there isn't a black and white issue as far as a definition of abuse and neglect. And I think people are not as, these awareness trainings have really provided individuals an opportunity to look at things a little differently.
Mm-hmm.
They obviously will say, physical abuse, I can see bruises, but when it comes to the most injurious or the psychological abuse,
okay.
Where many of our young people, people are across the UP or across the nation, ageism is a big issue, which is that they don't feel that seniors know what's going on so that they don't take them seriously.
Take them seriously, right.
Right.
Mm-hmm. In terms of these, our law enforcement contingent here has mentioned financial abuse. Easy to marshal evidence in a financial abuse case, wouldn't it be, compared to some of these others?
If there's a paper trail, yes.
Yeah.
if they're stealing from the home, or not so much, or if it's an embezzlement with a caregiver, it can be proven, but you have to follow the trail.
Okay.
And it's pretty easy to prove.
Okay.
It's complicated, but it's once you get it all there, you can prove the case.
What about the other kinds of cases? Do you ever receive any comments offhand or something that might suggest you need to look into a case or look into a person's circumstances?
Well, just one thing I can think of right now, that I don't know if it's related exactly to your question, but is we had mentioned before, prior to taping, that... Mm-hmm. I know some of the things I'm doing as far as with my CST position with the elderly and even in the schools and telling people with the prescription medication problem that we're having right now with the with as many addicts as we have out there, the opioids exactly. You know, just to make sure they have all their medications locked. Something as simple as that, because quite honestly, most elderly probably don't. And right now, it doesn't matter if somebody's addicted. They're going to steal from their loved ones. It doesn't matter. It could be mom and dad, their brothers and sisters, the ones that they love the most. So they're going to break in because they need that next fix. And the elderly most certainly are the ones that we got to make sure that we protect.
Okay. We're talking about elder abuse with UPCAP Long-Term Care Programs Director Mark Bomberg, retired UPCAP Quality Assurance Specialist Kathy Clintworth, Michigan State Police Community Service Trooper Dale Hongesto, and Marquette County Prosecuting Attorney Matt Wiese. Is state and local spending equal to the challenge of managing elder abuse, would you say?
Probably not. Like most programs that are social, they're not funded to meet the total need. The Older Americans Act is the primary funding source for most senior programs.
Okay.
It was passed the same year as Medicare and Medicaid,
yeah.
But it is significantly underfunded in terms of the need. The amount of money, we've got 60,000 plus seniors in the Upper Peninsula, and if you take the grant monies that come in just for the Older Americans Act, it's equates to a couple of dollars per person per month. So it really is not significant. The $75,000 that we have for the PREVENT program allows us to get out and provide basic information to the community, but we could do a lot more.
Okay. The state legal tools and resources for responding to elder abuse include the Michigan Adult Protective Services, Health and Human Services, and Services to the Aging, generally. The federal Elder Justice Act supports a state long-term ombudsman program, as I understand it, and the Elder Justice Initiative, which is something that I think we might want to talk about. It stems from the Affordable Care Act, which is being dismantled by the majority in Congress. Medicaid, if not Medicare, may be affected. How important is the current health care law to programs and services you count on relevant to elder abuse?
It's a tough question to answer. Obviously, if Medicaid is cut as a result of the proposals right now, it will have a significant impact upon what we do with our seniors. The My Choice waiver program is just that. It's a waiver from what the state is required to provide from a Medicaid perspective.
Okay.
If Medicaid is cut significantly, the only real long-term care program that the state is required to provide is nursing home care. So if those type of things continue on a pathway, we could find ourselves in even more dire strait in terms of trying to help people remain in the community.
Not sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
It'll be more costly.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
Because going into the nursing home costs so much money.
Yeah.
And as a matter of fact, just keeping someone at home has a cost. So, how would you size that up? You've seen a lot of, nursing homes, I presume.
And, well, and as far as my nursing background with nursing home, health agencies, along with what I've been doing, the need for skilled aides to care for those frail seniors and those with disabilities is increased. And as we can train people to properly care for people, we'll ultimately decrease the potential for abuse of neglectful behavior.
If elder abuse is divided into the least number of categories, it appears we're looking at physical and emotional abuse, financial abuse, and neglect. Now, such offenses can be personal or institutional, and studies differ on which type predominates, which appears to be most prominent in this region. What would you say about this region? Are there ones that particularly concern you in, among those categories that we're seeing a lot of?
Well, I think the first thing is self-neglect is probably the number one percentage of neglect.
Okay.
And so what's happening in the community.
Someone isn't doing what they need for themselves.
Right, that their safety and health is at risk because of some of the things that they've done. And it's not that they're not capable of making a decision. They have consciously said, I don't want this. Or they've lost faith and community services.
Okay.
They've had somebody come in before, and then they told them what to do. Okay. They don't want that.
Matt, care to comment? I'm interested in, you know, because you can have all, reports can be subjective, I'm interested in what causes a case to rise to the level of a crime.
Well, what makes it rise to the level of the crime is if you have the intent to do the act, mm-hmm. or if there's, in a neglect case, if there's a reckless disregard for the care of that person.
Okay.
So that makes it rise to the level of a crime. And we see this, we get reports from all over the community on this type of stuff. When I train law enforcement, I tell them that when you go into a home, say for drug investigation, and you see a vulnerable adult or a senior citizen there, you know, that should be a red flag. You know, why is this person living in this situation? And it may be that the caregivers are taking advantage of some finances they can get from the senior citizen to help support their drug addiction.
Okay.
And, you know, so that types of things, we'll hear from banks with suspicious-looking checks come in, signed by the senior citizen but filled out by somebody else, and they will tip us off and call the police. So this comes in from all quarters. But I would just say to the average citizen that if you have a senior that you know and something doesn't look right, ask a question.
Okay. That seems to come up a lot. When they talk about vulnerability, which is something that can happen to anybody in a dependent status, could be a child or anyone like that, there's always a question in terms of vulnerability. I'm afraid I lost my train of thought here. Let me go on to another question right now, because that one kind of came out of nowhere. But I was going to say that barriers to intervention frequently occur because the problem is hidden. The victims are unwilling to report abuse for fear that they may see some reprisals or lose their independence or that sort of thing. How does an advocate overcome those kinds of barriers?
I think, personally, when we've dealt with a lot of different individuals that we have concerns, we have to look at the overall family dynamics that are within the situation, because I do know that those that are caring for someone who's frail in the home, sometimes there are issues that in their childhood that then comes up when they're caring. And I do think that that's something that we need to be considering when we're reviewing the whole situation.
Okay. The question of perpetrators always comes up. We're told that they can include anyone in a position of trust, control, or authority over the individual. But the majority of abusers appear to be family members. Are there common traits among them? That was actually what I was going to get at with Matt. Do you find people, for example, who are resentful of taking care of an elder relative, that kind of thing?
We find that situation where the person's resentful that they feel like they're stuck with the situation. They don't have the training. They don't have the supports. They don't have access to resources. Mm-hmm. And, you know, then things don't go well. We also see where they're taking advantage because there may be a check that comes in regularly or pension, or there may be funds that they can have access to. Mm-hmm. And so that's their motivator. And oftentimes we don't find out about this until it's too late and the funds have all been depleted.
Do you ever come across cases where people identified as friends or neighbors become abusers? If someone has designs on someone's property, there could be, you know, I could think of things from the outside. I've read of some cases, they don't seem to be that common.
I actually have a case that was being looked at right now and recently where it appears that somebody befriended a senior citizen to be able to have access to purchase property they owned.
Okay.
And it looks like it was not a fair market value exchange, and that's being looked into right now. So that can occur.
Okay. We had talked a little bit about institutional abuse. It's sometimes said to reflect a lack of knowledge, training, or resources. Hence, it falls under poor practice. The impact on an older person is nonetheless grave, but what should concerned family members look for to ensure the safety of elders in a nursing home or assisted care facility?
Well, I personally think that it's the same whether it's in a nursing home or in their own home.
Okay.
Is that you're identifying things that are being done or the senior is expressing mm-hmm. to the individual that's going on. And again, not ignoring the fact that what they're telling you mm-hmm. need to be looked into.
Okay.
If there's a change in the person's personality, that's a sign that something's not quite right.
That was part of the point I was trying to get-together for myself and responding to Matt there. As a general rule, I've read that warning signs of elder abuse often include some negative change in a person's condition. Like you said, if it doesn't look right, ask a couple of questions. What are your thoughts on that, though?
Well, I think that's very true. And sometimes the act of neglect doesn't start that way. Sometimes it's just a lack of knowledge. Somebody may say to you, if you don't change your way, you're going, I'm going to have to put you in a nursing home. Well, that's abuse. Mm-hmm. It wasn't intended to be that way, but sometimes I've heard it say that we become our parents' parents. And that's unfortunate,
sure,
because our parents are still deemed competent until a court of law says they're not competent anymore. And so they're entitled to make decisions, even if those decisions are bad.
Okay.
And they can lead to the neglectful or resentful decisions because they think they're doing what's best for their parents and their parents aren't being reciprocal of it. And it's...
You know, it seems to me that astute people might notice some signs visiting someone's home or something like that. Should they be reported? If so, how? And are the sources protected in a case like that when they're making a report?
Well, ultimately, if it goes into the area of the criminal justice system, there's no such thing as having an anonymous report.
Okay.
So, because that person would have to be a witness. But if the person has a strong personality and can be assertive, mm-hmm, that person themselves, you know, can ask some questions and just to check. You don't have to call the police every time. You can look into it yourself. And if something doesn't look or feel right, then I would be calling the state police or whoever.
Okay. We have less than a minute here. What are the most important state resources for you? What are the most important state resources you would welcome in helping you come to terms with this problem?
I'll let Kathy answer that.
Go ahead, Kathy.
Well, I don't think that there is enough money that's put into not advertising, but mm-hmm, making more
awareness
of our people across the Upper Peninsula or across the nation. This mm-hmm is a very serious situation. It is being done and underreported, and it needs more funds available.
Okay.
Our population is growing older, and as it gets older and larger, the resources are stretched thinner and thinner.
Okay. We've been talking about elder abuse with Upper Peninsula Commission for Area Progress Long-Term Care Programs Director Mark Bomberg, retired UPCAP Quality Assurance Specialist Kathy Clintworth, Michigan State Police Community Service Trooper Dale Hongesto, and Marquette County Prosecuting Attorney Matt Wiese. Thank you all for being here.
Thank you.
I'm Bill Hart. Thanks for joining us on MediaMate.
The preceding program was produced in studios located in the Edgar L. Hardin Learning Resources Center by WNMU-TV, Northern Michigan University Public Television.